From Spokane Public Radio, it's SPR News Today. I'm Owen Henderson. It's Thursday, February 12th, 2026. On today's show, should cities run grocery stores? Washington legislators are getting creative about how to make food more affordable in the state. And the Idaho House is set to take up a bill that would bar transgender people from using the bathroom that aligns with their gender identity in government buildings and private businesses. Plus, we hear the latest in the ongoing case against a Spokane father and daughter who were detained by Border Patrol and sent to Texas. They're back home now, but as Spokesman and Review reporter Alexandra Duggan explains, plenty of uncertainty remains. Those stories and more coming up on SPR News Today. With inflated food prices and a rash of grocery store closings at the end of last year, legislators are looking to address the cost of getting groceries for Washingtonians. State government reporter Sarah Mizestan has more.
One proposal would let cities operate grocery stores. Another would require 6 months' notice before a store closes in a food desert. Rich Smith, a representative for UFCW 3000, the union representing grocery store workers, highlights a bill to ease zoning restrictions for grocery stores. He says it could bring a grocery store back to a place like Lake City in Seattle, where stores have closed.
Last summer, we saw what happened when a corporate giant like Kroger pulls out of a working-class neighborhood in search for higher profits.
These grocery store bills are among the few areas in this short session where Democrats are trying to make life in Washington more affordable. They're also considering proposals to curb medical debt and allow people in apartments to install solar panels. In Olympia, I'm Sarah Mizestan.
All government buildings and private businesses in Idaho would have to ban transgender people from using bathrooms that align with their gender identity. That's under a new bill heading to the House floor. James Dawson reports.
Government offices and private businesses would have to take, quote, reasonable steps to enforce the bill if it becomes law, or they could face costly civil lawsuits. Carissa Folks from Boise was one of a few people supporting the measure. She says she's concerned about sharing a restroom with transgender women while helping her children use the toilet.
That is not a place that I personally as a mother want to worry about who might walk in behind me while my other toddler stands by and hopefully obeys and stays still.
Most testifiers said the bill discriminates against trans people and opens up businesses to lawsuits. Republican Representative Sean Dygert says he's not convinced just having a policy would keep companies out of trouble.
I'm not sure the policy is going to stop things. You know, it just references when my wife gives me the policy to not getting the ice cream in the freezer. It doesn't work very well.
The full House will take up the issue next. James Dawson, Boise State Public Radio News.
Final results are still pending, but with the East Valley School District bond measure at 54% when it needs at least 60, the school district isn't expecting it to pass. East Valley had hoped to borrow up to $220 million to build a new high school and a new middle school. Superintendent Brian Talbot says he's disappointed, but not disappointed in the community. Last time the school district put a bond measure to voters, he says it only got 37% approval.
We're changing the narrative. Our community recognizes the needs, and it's, you know, unfortunately, by the time that they get a chance to say yes to a tax, they've been taxed so hard that they don't have it.
The district now has about 2 weeks to decide if it wants to put a similar measure on the April ballot. Talbot says he and his team are weighing the needs of students against the exhaustion of taxpayers. Newport school officials also plan to regroup after their bond proposal failed on Tuesday. School board chair April Owen says, like in East Valley, the bond likely failed because of people's tax burden concerns. The $46.3 million bond only got 46.3% support.
I have to admit, I was expecting a better result. I did think that we would be closer to that 60% than it was.
The bond proposal primarily focused on fixing infrastructural issues at Newport High School. It would have taxed property owners $1.75 per $1,000 in assessed property value for up to 22 years. Owens says district officials will assess their options in a few weeks after all votes have been counted. Results of Tuesday's election will be certified on February 21st. We here at SPR are pretty excited about creating and growing this podcast, and if that's something you're excited about too, we'd love your help. Local news junkies will already know that the Inlander is currently running its annual Best Of competition. You can vote for SPR News Today in the local podcast category. Obviously, it would mean a lot to us, but more importantly, it would help us connect to other thoughtful and curious listeners, like you. You can find a link on our website or in this episode's description. Or you can leave the show a rating and review on your podcast platform of choice. 5-year-old Liam Conejo Ramos caught the country's attention when he was detained alongside his father by federal immigration agents in Minneapolis. But other kids have been caught up in the Trump administration's mass deportation efforts. One of them is 10-year-old Spokane resident Carla Tio Baltazar. She and her father, Arnoldo Tio Cal, were detained a month ago by U.S. Border Patrol and taken to a facility in Texas. They're now back in Spokane, but the case isn't over yet. With me now to break down where things stand is Alexandra Duggan. She covers public safety and breaking news for the Spokesman Review. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So first, can you give us just a little bit of background on Carla and her father? When and how did they come to live in Spokane?
They came here in 2019 from Guatemala. My understanding of the situation was that Arnoldo came into the U.S. without prior authorization, but was able to secure a hearing. That hearing basically allowed him to open up an asylum claim, and he is allowed to live and work in the U.S. legally while that asylum claim is ongoing. He is in the process, they call it a removal process. That doesn't mean that he is scheduled to be removed. It just means that he is in the process of figuring out whether or not he's going to be going back to his home country or whether or not a judge will grant him relief and allow him to stay in the United States with asylum.
Last month, January 10th, both Carla and her father were detained. What was the official explanation from Border Patrol?
Border Patrol had told us that he had missed quite a few check-ins. Those check-ins actually occur very often. So missing that many check-ins in a period of a few years is very minimal in the scheme of things. A lot of times immigrants have problems with those check-in processes because it's an app on their phone that they use. And a lot of times they're working construction, they don't have cell service, or sometimes they get check-ins confused with hearings because English isn't their first language. And so the process is just really convoluted and complicated, even though it might seem like it's really easy for us.
So missing check-ins was the official explanation. What did you hear from people who've been working with these two?
They were being taken to some check-ins by a volunteer who speaks their language and can assist them in the legal process and understanding and translating that. She was helping them out. And to her knowledge, those missed check-ins were not an issue. They never got a notice. They never were notified. And then all of a sudden, they were detained. Again, the process is complicated. Sometimes people don't know if they're doing something wrong, if they're not being told they're doing something wrong. And I think that that was the sentiment here.
After their detention, they spent a few weeks at a facility in Texas. Carla actually got sick there. They are now both back in Spokane. How did that come about?
Being at the facility in Texas, lots of people are filing federal habeas petitions. And those petitions essentially say that I am unlawfully detained. I am unlawfully imprisoned. For the most part, judges across the country are granting those petitions because they are calling a lot of ICE detentions a violation of due process because there are a lot of immigrants not getting bond hearings. And bond hearings are a different process than the asylum process. Again, the system is very complicated, but a bond hearing is essentially explaining your case to a judge. The judge will allow you to be out in the community on bond, kind of like in a criminal case. For most people, that is what due process looks like. So now the Trump administration has kind of taken that away. Essentially, their policy now says that if you come into the country without prior authorization as an immigrant, you are no longer allowed a bond hearing once you show up in court. A lot of attorneys and judges have spoken out against this, saying that it doesn't matter if you commit a crime, it doesn't matter who you are or what you have done, you still deserve your day in court. That current interpretation is being fought in the courts right now. That is up in the air. But that is how Carla and her father got caught up in all of this, is basically that they were not allowed a bond hearing when they got into that center. And this attorney, who is a Gonzaga alum, and actually a former DHS attorney, which is very interesting. He knows the system very well, and he was able to file a habeas petition, and the government just never responded to it. So they were released.
But as you've alluded to, this kind of isn't the end of things. This is a very complicated system. Where do things go from here?
This process obviously isn't over yet. I know that there was a lot of worries about getting re-detained. The federal side of this has come to a close for now, but he still has an ongoing immigration case. That immigration case is completely separate. That is working its way through right now, and it could be years until he sees a judge again. But in the meantime, that's just going to have to be an ongoing process with immigration court.
Alexandra Duggan covers breaking news and public safety for the Spokesman Review. Thank you for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you.
SPR News Today is a production of Spokane Public Radio. Reporting today was contributed by Sarah Mises-Tan, James Dawson, Eliza Billingham, Monica Carrillo-Casas, Alexandra Duggan, and me, Owen Henderson. I'm also your host and producer. Thanks for listening. It's SPR.